Good evening, everyone. The seasons are changing here. It's dark now in Paris and cooler for the past 2 days. Which is a direct reminder of impermanence. Like we talked about last week, impermanence. When we don't see the impermanent nature of it all, not only the seasons, but everything, we suffer. When we do realize impermanence, we experience peace. This is the basic teaching that we can gain experientially. And what has come to mind for me in the past couple of days is we have a koan that is that asks us to manifest a tree in an unmovable tree in a big storm. And I say this has come up for me in the past few days because the storm felt, I would say since the weekend, Saturday, the storm started feeling unbearable. The fear and the anxiety and the despair and the outrage and the anger and the powerlessness that, just to name a few of the emotions that have been coming up, related to my native country and the upheavals that, the endless upheavals that keep striking and arising. And this also applies to the global situation. We're all involved in a pandemic, climate change, identity politics, economic inequality, not to mention old age, sickness, death, you name it, it's here, right? And just in my own case, I think that it started becoming a bit overwhelming, particularly since the death of the Supreme Court Justice. And what then ensues from that and what is likely to happen from that. And then what are the implications of that. But that's just one element. I also have my brother who lives in Oregon and who has been directly threatened by the fires, the bad fires on the west coast of the United States, and has been on, I don't think he's on alert now, I think it's calmed down, but he and his family were on alert that any moment they could receive a text message saying leave, and they would just have to go and leave everything. You in Portugal are familiar with this situation because you've had terrible, terrible wildflowers fires as well. So those are just two of the elements that have been present for me. And then just the endless barrage of sickness, you know, arguments about whatever the subjects are, fear, anxiety, like we're all experiencing. And I read this, apparently, Donald Trump's son-in-law, who is one of, is also one of his advisors, which is outrageous in itself, but in this most recent book by Bob Woodward, is quoted as saying, in order to, people don't understand the Trump presidency, in order to understand it, you have to read Alice in Wonderland. And he specifically cited, or someone cited, a line from Alice in Wonderland that is, if you don't know where you're going, every road leads there. And I thought that now, it's really intrigued me that that was what Jared Kushner, this guy, would say about Trump. Meaning, I mean, I don't know what he meant exactly, but we can see that it's chaos, right? Nobody knows where they're going. And they have this idea that, so then whatever happens, we'll take them there. However, I saw this, I experienced, when I sat with it, I experienced it in a different way, which it applies to what we're talking, which applies to our, and I think this is probably more appropriate because Alice in Wonderland is quite a deep spiritual book. There's even a guy in our Zen, in the White Plum lineage, who wrote a book about the Zen of Alice in Wonderland. And I think that this not knowing where you're going has more to do with what we call not knowing. And that, just to simplify it, when you don't know where you're going, every path will lead you there. It's that you are already there. You are on the path already. When you don't have a fixed idea about where you're going and what result you want. Now, I'm not saying this is not at all what Jared Kushner meant and the Trump administration is about. However, in a sense, they don't see that that's what it's about, because exactly what they're manifesting is the chaos of not knowing where you're going, but not realizing that, not realizing that you don't know where you're going in the deep sense that I'm talking about, the profound letting go of an objective and a goal and an attachment to self. So I thought of that, and during the weekend when this upheaval, you know, struck me, and I saw this in terms of impermanence and how, and I saw that my fear and anxiety, that when I became involved with trying to reaction, which is like is weapons, right? So it's like arming myself with reaction and fighting, responding to aggression with aggression, entering into and indulging in the ideas of separation and difference and us versus them and a fixed position of how things should be. I realized that when I was involved with that, that's when I was really suffering. And that comes back to what I said before about when I don't see the impermanent nature is when I suffer. So, and I realized that when I could let go of that, when I just became aware of my feelings of fear and anxiety, not going into what I should do about it and how things should be and how they shouldn't be. And when I when I noticed it without acting on it, and when I went towards it and became familiar with it, it diffused the escalation of the fear and the anxiety. And there was a peace. And this, and a realization that that there's this shared vulnerability, this shared fear, this shared anxiety, and that much of what we see manifesting in the world is a reaction to it, is an acting out against it, which just, as I said, just escalates it and feeds it. And then there's more of it that arises because there's more fearful things that responses that arise. But in my own experience during the weekend, in these past few days, I kept coming back to just seeing what I was doing. Just seeing, becoming aware of the fear and the anxiety and the despair and the anger and the powerlessness and all of that. And that allowed me to, that gave rise to some relief and to a sense of you know, it sounds crazy, but a sense of compassion, a sense of the beauty of the world, the desire to care for the world, to relieve the suffering, to not seek to further the suffering, and in that there's great spaciousness. And I thought of, you know, things like you know, we talk about karma, we talk about yin and yang, we talk about you know, in popular jargon, we say what goes around comes around, these things like this. And I know deeply in my being that all of that is true. And that there is no darkness without light. There are consequences to actions, and that what is happening today, these are consequences of previous actions, and what will happen tomorrow will be consequences of actions now. And how I behave in this moment is everything. It's a way of repairing, of being one with this moment, of not indulging in fear and anger and powerlessness and despair and anxiety, is a way of repairing hurt, pain, whatever I'm feeling, suffering. And it's also a way of not perpetuating it. And then that changes how I move in the world, how I feel in this moment, but also then how I react, how I behave, what I say, what I do. You know, like we chant, all suffering ever created by me, in body, mouth, and thought. So it's the way that I am physically, what I do, how I manifest, what I think, and what I say, all of that. And we can see that much of what's happening in the world arises from that. And that there's no way out of it. There's only a way into it. And, you know, one way or the other, we end up going into it. So you have the choice of either, you know, collapsing into it or waking up, you know, collapsing, stumbling blindly into it and creating suffering for yourself and others, or awakening and clear-eyed. You know, it's interesting that this year, which has been just, you know, it's hard to imagine what else could happen in this year, right? Everything, like, you know, in American politics, they're saying, you know, what else could possibly happen? It's like the only thing left is for someone to be assassinated, you know, or something like that, you know. It's just endless what has arisen. But this is also in the world. It's not just in American politics. And it's interesting that this year is 2020. And 2020, when you go to have your eyes tested, if you have perfect vision, we call that 2020. I don't know if that works in French or in Portuguese or whatever. But in English, the term for perfect vision is 2020. I don't really know why that is. Do you know, Debbie, why that? No. What an interesting thing that we're being thrown with all of this, we're being hit with all of these manifestations of delusion. And yet, it's in this year of lucid, clear seeing. I don't know what that means. I haven't, it's just a symbol, right, 2020. But it's an intriguing one that I've been thinking about. And wondering what that, how that, of course, it doesn't mean anything, but symbolically, how can that speak to us? You know, so I've been looking into that. Which brings us back to another koan, which is delusion is enlightenment. So, you know, here we are in the depths of this murky delusion, you know, just like heavy duty delusion that we're involved in. And 2020 is enlightenment. So what does that mean? You know, I'm using clear vision as being enlightenment. I don't know. I'm looking at it. We'll see. I know just in my own case that there's been a lifting of my burden in the past few days, an easing of my suffering and my dis-ease since I took the step back. And it kind of started, I think, with this notion of yin and yang. I think I read something about, you know, Chinese philosophy or something of yin and yang, and that one feeds the other. And as soon as there is one, the other appears. And they it's not that they cancel each other out, but you can't be fixed on one or the other. And and this is true, you know. I know that experientially. Even if nobody told me about yin or yang, I know that experientially, even just in everyday life, that's how it works. And that, you know, like the lotus, beautiful things arise from the muck, from the mud. You know, we chant this, may we live like with purity like a lotus in the midst of this mud. And the way to do that is to not go away from or push away from or judge the beauty in the mud, but to be with it, go towards it, go into it, enter it. And that's what our practice is all about, And we don't have to go somewhere else to see it. We don't have to do something else. We can. I voted. And I'm hoping that Debbie and Joanne and Lisa voted too. The other Americans present. I recycle. I don't eat much meat. I eat a bit of chicken from time to time. You know, I do what I can. At the same time, I don't have a fixed idea where I'm going. No, I don't know where I'm going. And so every path will lead me there because I don't know where I'm going. And, you know, there can, in this notion of karma and consequences and actions and reactions, there is also something bittersweet about that, and a deep sadness, because I know that a lot of what is happening now, as I said, is a result of previous actions. We see this with climate change. We can say that the economic inequities that exist in our culture so profoundly are the result of, you know, rampant consumerism and indulging in our grasping desires to possess and accumulate. We can see that wars are the consequence of our not seeing the oneness of self and other. And at the same time, so there's kind of a deep sadness about that. And there's also, at the same time, a great joy knowing that what I do now will make a difference. What everyone does now makes a difference. So whether it's, you know, sitting on your cushion every morning or once a week or whatever you do, that makes a difference. It really does. Immeasurable difference. And there's also some sadness that there will be a price to be paid for what's going on now. Some people can have a sense of vindictiveness or vengeance and saying, oh, these people who are doing all these horrible things, they will pay, you know, they will be punished. But there's a great sadness in that, you know, because we do know that there are consequences and we do know that there will be suffering. But we can limit this, we can ease our own suffering and those around us by our actions now. and see and appreciate the imperfections in ourselves, and not try to eliminate them. I see Tiago holding a bowl, and I think of, you know, the wonderful technique of not our faults and errors, but working with them to make them part of who we are, and those are our cracks, and see the beauty of that. But we can only do that if we step back and do not become attached to a perfect result, a quote perfect result, or how things should be. We can learn so much from our difficulties, from our fears and our anxieties and our pain and suffering. It's great, great teachings. If we can step back, notice what we're experiencing, and not become stuck and attached to it. We can even notice that we're not able to step back and that we're attached to it. Notice that too. Questions, comments, whatever you'd like to share are welcome. Joa?
Yes, thank you for, it brought a lot of various things. I was also stunned by the death of the Supreme Court RGB, and also what's gonna happen next. Also, I saw a very powerful documentary on a Netflix documentary called The Social Dilemma about social network. It was very interesting because they interviewed a lot of people that worked at Google, Facebook, and Instagram, and Pinterest, and all that, reflecting on the consequences of what they had done. Increase in suicide rates in the US with young children. And what struck me the most, and what seemed very vivid, was the disinformation and fake news that the social media allowed, and that touched at the fabric of our social fabric, and what do we share, and the fact that facts and truth have no importance anymore. So it was very, very interesting, and they were saying, you know, it's talk, but at the end of the line, it's also people dying, and we see it now in the US, but elsewhere, with people not believing that the virus even exists, or it's a conspiracy, or whatever, and then at the end of the day, people are dying. And Trump doesn't even want to comment on the fact that 200,000 people died. So and it brought me back also to the vows on a very practical level. I vow to refrain in indulging in sensual misconducts. So everything that is related to social media. I don't use a lot of social media, but I certainly use other things that is related to that. And then I have a question also what you said, Roshi, about not knowing. I'd like to know how to articulate that with those vows, the intentions that are embedded in the vows. And my feeling is that these not knowing is very much linked to not having an idea about the particular result, but I also feel that our intention also that are embedded in the vows drives us towards a certain direction also, and exclude certain path, or we try to limit certain path. So I'd like to hear how you articulate these two things, the vows and the not knowing.
Mm-hmm. Because the vows that we take, whether it's the four vows or the precepts, are just fingers pointing at the oneness of life, the wholeness, and that they are there to remind us of that, and they are great, great fingers, in fact, to keep in mind. But ultimately, the realization of the oneness of life is what they are about. And when we realize that, when we have that experience of the oneness of life, then we don't... The vows are still there for us, and a way of reminding us. But naturally, we will not act in violation of the vows. This is from an absolute point of view, let's say. Because we know that in the relative world, it's impermanent, and sometimes we're not aware and we're doing harm, and sometimes we are aware and we're doing harm. And so therefore it's important to have the vows to keep us back, to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. So in terms of not knowing, it's kind of like the koan that we have of how do you go straight on a road that has 99 curves? They say when you're climbing a mountain, you're not looking at the peak. Because if you look at the peak, you won't see the path and you will fall, right? So you have to it's every step is the way, in fact. You know that you're on a mountain, and you know that you would like to reach the top of the mountain. But at the same time, if you're only focused on getting to the top of the mountain, then you're missing the whole way. You're missing, it's like John Lennon's thing of, life is what happens when we're planning for other things. So if we're not paying attention to each step that we take, then we're missing the path and we won't reach the top of the mountain, actually. So it's true, we do have this intention, but this intention is born of this realization, it's born of this very basic intention to awaken to the oneness of life and live according to that. We don't know what that looks like. We don't know what that means. We don't know where that will take us. We don't know what those 99 curves are. But every one of those curves is taking us there because we don't know. And every one of those curves is it already is the thing. So if we see the oneness of life, then we see that wherever we are is it. And we don't need to... be anywhere else, I guess, something like that. At the same time, we forget that. And so we have the vows that remind us, and we return to them again and again and again. It's like, Bernie's thing of cleaning the glass. You know, I use the glass to drink out of, and then I wash it when I'm finished so that I can use it again. And then it will be dirty again and I'll have to wash it again. Not that it's bad dirty, it's just that that's part of what the situation of our life is that we clean our dishes because otherwise it's not appropriate to use them. So something like that.
All right, thank you.
And the reason that I said, you know, if we say that the Trump administration doesn't know where they're going and so all the roads lead them there, what is missing for them in that, from my observation, is that they do have an idea of, even if it's not, you know, it's clearly not publicly stated what their idea is, but I think they know what their idea is. And, but they don't know how, their way of getting there is chaos. You know, it's like to just make everything chaotic so people don't notice, and then they'll maintain the hold on power and basically on the white capitalist male patriarchy is some sort of something like what it is. But I mean, and that's really simplified, but that's basically what it is. And so they do know where they want to go, but it's presented as not knowing, because I think that there is this center of ignorance. It's not an enlightened not knowing, it's an ignorant not knowing. And therefore, it causes great pain and suffering and chaos. Where an enlightened not knowing creates enlightenment. An ignorant not knowing creates ignorance. Question always comes back to the same thing. All of it always comes back to the, you know, the attachment to fixed, the realization of impermanence or not. You know, that's where the suffering lies. Attachment and non-attachment, and attachment to fixed identities will create suffering, and realizing impermanence will ease the suffering. I gave the example of my own experience, but also on a collective scale. Well, if there's no further comments, questions, maybe we can stop there.
Just no comment or question. It's just or a comment saying that just the silent moment just now felt like grieving, collective grieving, and because of what, all that you said, and which resonates so much. So yeah, just that.
And what is the grieving about, do you feel?
We're grieving our sadness of just this realization of what, without this, not necessarily not suffering, just sadness of the state of things.
Just
sad.
Yeah, it is. And that's an important realization to have, and to experience that feeling of sadness. And to feel, you know, it's all, there's also something bittersweet about it, about the deep, bittersweet in the sense that it's moving, I feel, because we recognize the delusion in ourselves, and it's sad that we see the same thing around us, but we also see it in ourselves. We see what the cause of that suffering is and the sadness about it. And there's great sadness with that. And that's very important to acknowledge.
Adding to the, it's interesting, Lisa talked about grieving, and we were silent for a moment. What was on my mind, I was grieving in a way, there's an article, I was thinking about an article I read yesterday, it came out on Nature, I think, an experiment with all the very rigorous way they have of doing that, those things. And basically, it was about being alone, each person in that study being alone with their own thoughts, or if it became unbearable, or they felt like they were not able to do it, they would press a button and they would receive, they would give themselves an electric discharge. Like this, it goes into very detail, doesn't matter now, but basically this big conclusion or result of the study was that a huge number of people prefer, it finds it unbearable to be even 5 minutes alone with their own thoughts, with no distractions. And they would prefer to give themselves an electric discharge. There were some people who, in the space of a couple of hours, they gave themselves 1,600 electric discharges, because they couldn't. They prefer that because they would either be in silence alone, with no distractions, or they would be doing that. And so that was very shocking for me. And I felt very sad. And I was, in a way, I think I was grieving for those people. And it really makes the whole picture a bit darker, and so it's really difficult times. And apparently a lot of people have a hard time with it. It's really a lot of suffering where you cannot stand your own mind, your own thoughts. You can't bear it. That's so sad. It's really painful. It's really painful. Thank you.
And again, you know, when we feel that pain, when we feel that sadness, it's because there's something in it that resonates. We recognize the same tendency in ourselves, that we have that, that we can do that too. You know, we maybe don't give ourselves an electric charge, but we, you know, surf the internet and watch YouTube videos, or drink too much wine, or, you know, everybody has their stuff they do to fill up, to not just be here with what is. And so we recognize the tragedy of that, the sadness of it. And when we do, then we can have great compassion for those, for that behavior, for ourselves when we do it. And we can see the root of it, why do we do that? And make a difference then, you know? And that's why we do what we do. That's why I do what I do, you know? That's why I do this practice and teach and organize retreats. And that's why I lead writing workshops, which have nothing to do with Zen practice, officially. The people don't know that it's Zen practice, but that's why I write. That's why I'm alive. My life is dedicated to that, to easing that suffering. And I, you know, I came to that because I suffered. I only could know this path because I too suffered and do suffer. You know, I just described to you the past few days how much I was suffering with everything. And I was suffering more when I was seeing it as being outside of me or happening to someone else, or identifying with it, it's only happening to me. You know, when I was in my sick bed 6 months ago and thinking, oh, poor me, you know, why me? Why am I the only one who's sick? You know, whatever. Then I just suffered more. But if we can open our hearts, like you say, João, and you see this, and you can open your heart to it and receive it and feel it, there's not only a shared suffering, but shared joy. Everything is shared then. Miguel, yeah.
There's something that you said about the 2020 that resonates, something that I'm what I feel is that well, this virus is ourselves, is ourselves calling ourselves to see perfectly, to unmask, and that hurts. So, but I feel like that metaphor of the 2020 is something resonates with what I feel about this. It's like we are calling ourselves to see ourselves, you know. And that, yeah, that hurts. And the more we resist, the more it hurts. The blind there we are, the more it hurts. Yeah. It's this.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And you know, you talk about unmasking. So we're being asked to mask, which is really, you know, this too is really telling. You know, that everyone is being to become something impersonal. We're asking to experience the impersonal, to not be attached to our face and how we look and our will to wear a mask or not wear a mask. We're asked to join in a collective ritual for the well-being of the collective, for everyone. And we see there are people resisting, you know, because they don't want to. They don't want to go into in fact, they're unmasking themselves by not wearing a mask. You know, they're really showing their desire to cling to a personal idea, fixed identity, my health, not yours. And then it's very interesting that too. You know, it's a manifestation. Again, it's all a manifestation of everything we've been saying. It always is. However, this is just the moment when it's really clear, like Miguel says, you know, it's like really, really clear now that, wow, everything is so clear. So, you know, it's like in Orioki when somebody doesn't want to do it. You know, or, I mean, I tell the story of, you know, me not wanting to do what one of the things. I had this idea that you didn't have to move the bowls and brush the middle twice, you know, when cleaning up. And I very proudly told that to my teacher and the other senior students. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. And Roshi said, just do it, Amy. Just do it. And this not wanting to wear a mask is like that. You know, it's like, well, I don't want to do it like everybody else. I want to do Orioki my way. I don't want to do it like everybody else is doing it. And when Roshi said that, just do it, boy, I felt so free. It's like, wow, I didn't have to hang on to that thing anymore. I didn't have to hang on to that idea anymore. I was like, wow, I can just do this. And you know, with the mask, it's like that too. You just do it. And there's great suffering in the whole thing of, you know, people not doing it. And I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm just remarking when Miguel said that about unmasking. He didn't mean that's not what he was talking about. He was like, we were unmasking ourselves. We were unmasked, but it's true. Everything is practice. Everything. In the heart of your life, every moment. All practice, which is fabulous. That's the beauty. That's the joy and the happiness and the beauty of it all tonight. You know, that it's all practice. Every moment is a moment of awakening. So, maybe we'll end on that note. With the four vows.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Awaken, awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life.